Welcome back to the second part of the big show. It is time to midsummer. Get inside the war room.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
Zane Valji, political campaign strategist, partner at Northweather, worked for Calgary Mayor Nad Nenshi, Rachel Notley. He is mellifluous and generous and loquacious, and he is with us. But so is the golden-throated meadowlark himself, the marathon-running, beer-swilling, generous man, Tim Powers, the chairman of Summa Strategies, managing director of Abacus Data. And joining us today as our special guest is the effervescent David Moskrop, the contributing columnist for the Washington Post, right here in the nation's capital. And he's only here for one reason, the weather. Welcome, gentlemen.
I ran.
Hello.
That was better than calling me dumb jock. So well done. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
I would never call you a dumb jock. I didn't know you were I didn't know you were a jock.
You'll pay for that later.
Let's first of all welcome everyone. I hope everything's. Let's start with this, and I'm going to start with our friend, the brilliant Tim Powers. Stephen Harper said this.
Pierre Poilievre was a strong minister in my government. In the past several years, he's been our party's most vocal and effective critic of the Trudeau Liberals. He's been talking about the issues, especially the economic issues, that matter.
Yes, he has not done this. He didn't do this for Scheer or for O'Toole, but for all sorts of reasons, Stephen Harper is laying the virtual hands on Pierre Poilievre to push him over the finish line as if he needed a push. What's the significance of this? What's behind it, Tim?
Well, I have to laugh. A strong minister in our government for a half a second. Pierre didn't become a cabinet minister until the very end. I have to, I'll also add this. Can you imagine, Evan, Zane, and David, if this had happened to Harper in his 2004 leadership race with Belinda Strunk and Tony Clement, if Brian Mulroney or Preston Manning would have endorsed one of those candidates, he would have lost his poop. And he's long been an advocate of staying on the sidelines. So why has he come out? I think honestly, the principal reason is he has some concern about what happens after September 10th. Those concerns are about legacy preservation, and a very key element of that is the future of the Conservative Party. And we'll all remember 2003, 2004, when that agreement was done, one of the central items about the unification of the Conservative Party, and Stephen Harper took this to heart, was to make sure it remained a strong institution. Institutions are under challenge. Pierre Poilievre, interestingly, is leading some of that challenge. So I think he's laid the hands on Poilievre, sending a message that that's where he feels the protection of the institution will happen. Meanwhile, Leslyn Lewis, John Charest, Scott Aikenson, and Roman Baber are picking up their chiclets off the sidewalk because what a kick of the teeth they've got.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think, David, there's about 700 million reasons why Stephen Harper does not like Jean Charest, going back to the $700 million that he gave Quebec in 2007 and a very concerned Jean Charest decided to give a $700 million tax break to Quebecers and squeak out a minority win. And then in the next 2008 election, he hammered Harper for cultural policies and is like, thank you. My name's Stephen Harper. I am a collector of slights. I have not forgotten.
No, he doesn't forget. He has a very long memory. To borrow a phrase about another prime minister used by a biographer, he haunts us still. In fact, another line, he's lurking. Maybe a little slightly more infamous line, he's lurking. But he is, and he certainly remembers this. And, of course, him and Jean Charest are very different types of conservative. I mean, if you want to boil it down to a sort of simplest post-stamp iteration, Harper is a sort of new Western conservative, slightly libertarian conservative, social values conservative, and Jean Charest is an old red Tory, and those factions have been at one another for some time. And Harper obviously hasn't given up on the party that he founded. But I don't know that I would either. If you played such a role in the resurgence of the party, I think I'd have a hard time letting go as well, even though he seems to be quite busy in his retirement from politics.
Zane, let me get I'll go for you for a double. I thought Andrew Coyne, in his inimitable fashion, said, he said, Stephen Harper, the winner of one majority in five tries, says Polyev has what it takes. It's like, wow, coin. Just, he goes for the kneecap. So what's your take?
Well, batting 200 for that double, one out of five. Listen, my take is this. Who needs this more? Like, when you analyze this from the perspective of who needs this more, is it Pierre Polyev, who's a runaway train now that Patrick Brown is out, Jean Charest underperforming, is more than likely going to win this on the first ballot? Or is it Stephen Harper, to David's point, whose entire political legacy is built on ensuring that the Conservative Party of Canada sticks together? If this thing does not stay together, if this thing disintegrates, if the factions on in the center leave, if this is not a clear winner territory, there is some, not reputational risk, but there's some legacy harm for Stephen Harper on this. And so when you look at that, you combine that with what's already been said about long memories. And let's talk about the long memory he still probably has for his hatred of Justin Trudeau. To have someone that could fight Trudeau on the economy, fight Trudeau on a rhetorical level, he probably likes that quite a bit. And then the final thing I'd add in terms of how this benefits or why Harper may have done this, we talk about this all the time in politics, that politicians are addicted to, almost trained by folks like Tim and I and others to say, if you find a parade that's bubbling up, that looks like a sure thing, get in front of it. And there is no reason to not get in front of it. Right. And I think there is something to be said about the old hat of Stephen Harper saying, this thing's a runaway train. I see an upside for me. I see upside for my legacy. Let me jump in front of it. Maybe take some credit for why it got that first ballot victory that it will in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, interesting. Tim, I'd weigh in on that. I think, look, Jenny Byrne ran the Harper campaign. I know they lost in 2015, very tight with Stephen Harper. Pierre Polyev, there is no fruit that was from the more, you know, developed than Polyev on the Harper tree. I just didn't think Harper had any other choice. Why he's weighing in now, I'm with you. He senses there's big cracks here and he's trying to hold together the coalition. Mm-hmm. Then I don't know if it does hold together. We'll see.
Well, and what's equally interesting about this, look, I think Jenny and her team have done an excellent job. I'm not the biggest Pierre Polyev fan. Shock to no one who's listened to this segment, but they've masterfully run this campaign, even with some of the asinine things Polyev has said. They don't need it, but I do think two very quick points on this. One is, I think they've watched previous campaigns where Maxime Bernier and Peter McKay faltered as front runners. They're not taking anything to chance. The Harper endorsement gives them that. They've also taken a really interesting calculated risk. They have brought back the ghost of Christmas past. Harper was almost expunged from the memory of Canadians. You remember the Liberals basically since 2004, whether he was running or not, have run campaigns against Stephen Harper. Pierre Polyev has set himself up to be son of Harper. And that you think that ad is going to pop up, or that statement's going to pop up everywhere. Maybe it doesn't matter anymore. Maybe it won't matter in 2 or 3 years. But it certainly has mattered in the past.
David, last minute to you. It was certainly a response to Aaron O'Toole trotting out Brian Mulroney saying, this is not your father's Conservative Party. Now it's Pierre Polyev saying, by the way, yeah, it is. David.
Well, when O'Toole said that, I said, he's right. It's your grandfather's Conservative Party.
Yeah.
I mean, who brings out Brian Mulroney to that? No, this is the new kid on the block, checks the notes. Brian Mulroney. I mean, in a couple of years, the guy might be on our money. He's been around for some time. But I do think that Stephen Harper and Pierre Polyev share a broadly similar politics. I think Pierre Polyev has taken it and turned it into a caricature. He's doing sort of Margaret Thatcher cosplay. Not that anyone asked for it, but I think that's what he's doing. But if you're Stephen Harper and you look and say, okay, well, it's either him or back to Mulroney, where do you go? The question will be, what do Canadians say to that? And it's hard to say, because we don't know what the state of the country will be if we last to 2025 before the next election. But they might well say, no, we're quite happy with the social programs we have. And we think actually we need government, more government, because look what just happened. My God, and government had my back to some extent. So I think the ultimate question will be, can Polyev sell that to Canadians? And I'm not convinced.
David, Tim, Zane, hang on. Part two. I want to dig into what is going on in Alberta with Danielle Smith. Zane, get ready. You're up next. Coming up on the big show, the gold medalist, Andre DeGrasse, the Olympic medalist, the 11-time world champion. Andre DeGrasse will join us. Now, that is a jock. I mean, I know Tim Powers here thinks he's the big jock here. I know that. I'm just saying that we do have Andre DeGrasse coming up next.
I have to say, I did see Tim on camera yesterday for the first time in a long time, and he's got a black eye. He's got a black eye, which to me is very jock-like. Now, I'm not saying it is jock. It is jock-like and jock-lite, but, you know, he has some creds.
Well, hold on. Let me do this. Tim Powers is here, chairman of Summa Strategies, Zane Velji, political strategist, and David Moskov, the contributing columnist for The Washington Post in Ottawa. Okay, now that I've introduced you, Tim, can you update us on what's going on? I mean, obviously, and by the way, if the story of your black eye is bad, make it up. Just make something good.
It's classic, actually. It wasn't as good as the one I once had on Question Period where my eye was shut and Roger Cusner called me Cyclops. No, not that good. But I was at a regional water park that will remain nameless. It was very crowded with my young son, who you know, Evan Patrick. And the waves were very high, and he was about to swallow a lot of waves. And I took him, and as I took him, a gentleman came over the top and mistakenly elbowed me square in the eye. So I call it the water park injury, the weakest black eye I've ever had.
You know, there was a time when Tim's nighttime stories, when he sort of roll in with like a black eye, and they'd be actually, they'd be like, oh, let's take a Lou Reed walk on the wild side. Now they're just like this, which is my kind of story. Zane Velji, I'm going to play you, speaking of the wild side, let's segue into Alberta politics. My God. Danielle Smith. Whose journey towards relevancy has been a circuitous one, from radio host and business advocate. Then she was the head of the Wild Rose Party. Then she crossed the floor and betrayed them with eight others, joined Jim Prentice, then lost her seat, then was in the political wilderness, then is a longtime peddler of various crazy conspiracy theories medically. Most recently, she's talking about stage four cancer, which she knows absolutely nothing about. But here she is talking about cancer and telling people without her medical degree how to deal with stage one, two, and three of cancer.
Absolutely. Once you've arrived and got stage four cancer and there's radiation and surgery and chemotherapy, that's an incredibly expensive intervention, not just for the system, but also expensive in the toll it takes on the body. But when you think about everything that built up before you got to stage four and that diagnosis, that's completely within your control. And there's something that you can do about that that is different.
Thanks, Dr. Smith. No, I know you're a doctor. I didn't know that. Because I didn't realize if you have a talk radio show like mine, you also get an instant medical degree so you can wax philosophic about pediatric cancers of which you know nothing about. Zane, what is the story? And apparently she's going to be the next premier.
Well, the story is this, you know, you did a great job kind of outlining all the elements of her political bio. There is one that I want to double down on, which is a decade ago in this province, we almost handed her the keys to be our next premier. She was mainly like a week away from becoming premier until Alison Redford snatched that victory again because the Wild Rose looked too extreme. And I think the conclusion then
that was the Lake of Fire incident, right? One of her candidates said that gay people will burn in a lake of fire, which she said, I don't think I'm going to remove him. So that was the take note,
Danielle
watchers, Smith, lakes of fire are bad.
Absolutely. And Danielle Smith, almost, you know, left that party, not almost, left that party because she said the Wild Rose is too extreme for me. Well, she's back a decade later, now defining the outer fringes of conservatism in Alberta. And I think one of the biggest misunderstandings about conservatism in this place is that we are ideologically conservative when in fact we're actually tribally conservative. And what she's doing is she's saying, and it's the same problem that Pierre may have, is that the pathway to win the leadership is not the pathway to win the province. And she is saying that's tomorrow's problem. I'm going to double down on ideological conservatism. It's a one member, one vote system, this leadership race. So there's no points. She doesn't care. I can disproportionately reach the people who feel like their voice is not being heard, who have these beliefs, who may look at this, which is a gaffe, a clear gaffe, a mistake, and not penalize her for it, lets her double down on it. And she's one of those folks that says it's tomorrow's problem how I win over the province. My job right now is to be the defining anger, the rural voice, the fringe populist voice to incubate all these votes, all these supporters that I can. And for whatever purpose, it is working. You're seeing the crowds. You're seeing her chief competitor in Brian Jean, who may share that same audience, just kind of tanking. So it's going to be very fascinating to see, Evan, because I think one of two scenarios happens. Danielle Smith wins on the first ballot because all that Brian Jean support goes to her. Or Brian Jean's relative weakness means that she has to go to two or three ballots, and then we might see one of the more moderate or centrist candidates emerge. But as it relates to the dominant headlines, it's all Danielle Smith all the time here in Alberta, which I would not have predicted 6 weeks ago.
David, there's a bigger issue here. Maybe you could, you know, as we watch certain, you know, politics radicalize on the right side, and I focus on it because we've got a federal conservative leadership race, and now we've got the race in Alberta as well, and by the way, in the UK as well. But when did, look, I understand anger, I understand populism, I understand that, but when did it become detethered from reality, where there was no fidelity towards facts or something? You could say whatever you want. This, if it doesn't, you know, if our federation doesn't work, we'll just change it. It's as if there's no fidelity to reality, that anger trumps facts.
Yeah, and it, in the last couple of years, it's been particularly bad. It ramps up. That's always been there to some extent, but now it's become acceptable in a way that it wasn't. Just like political scandals have become tolerated in ways they weren't in the past. Remember Gary Hart? You know, Gary Hart couldn't run for president.
Monkey business.
He was found to be, you know, exactly. Do you remember, you know, when was it George W. Bush who looked at his watch and sighed during a debate and was like, wow, that's the end of him.
Dan Quayle misspelled potato. It was over. It's like, oh,
right,
my God, that's
exactly.
It?
Exactly. It's like, well, that's it. Potato with an E. You're done.
Yeah.
But over time, what happens is if political elites decide that they're going to break norms and they find they can get away with doing that, they keep doing it. Because if you can get away with nonsense that you shouldn't, but it helps you, well, then you get away with it. And if the public becomes normalized to that, the public kind of gets used to it and says, yeah, okay, but, you know, well, that's just how it is, or it's not as bad as that guy. And then you get people stoking particular communities and finding that, that things like that resonate with them. Well, now it's an asset. It's not just a potential liability that you avoided. It's an asset. And so you build that community. You double down. You mobilize those folks. And then it's off to the races. Norms have broken. There's a decline. It's really hard to get that toothpaste back in the tube because people get used to it. They tolerate it. And social media, of course, and digital technologies don't help. So we've basically custom built the worst of all possible worlds for contemporary politics at the worst moment.
Yeah.
So good luck to us.
You get the government you want. I know, Tim, I know there's a conflict with Sumo. I think you've done work in the past with Hockey Canada. If we're crossing any red lines, just let me know. But
yep.
I just, you know, because I know you love sports and we all do, Hockey Canada is right now in the hot seat. The president won't resign. They've paid $7.6 million from their, quote, equity fund to settle sexual abuse allegations. It has never been transparent. Sheldon Kennedy, who's going to join me in about half an hour, and I just got a minute here, he's calling for everyone to resign. Can they reestablish credibility with this leadership team?
They can, and it's not as simple as resigning. But look, what happened was terrible and abhorrent. And I can tell you, as also somebody like you, minor hockey coach, what they do at the grassroots level is very good. They need to emulate that at the top. And as a former head of a national sports organization, massive cultural change happening. All to say what happened in Halifax, or allegedly happened in Halifax, what happened in London, wrong. But I would just say this. Scott Smith, the current president, Tom Rennie, they made mistakes, but I know them to be people of integrity. It's going to come down to whether the board will back them or thinks that new leadership is necessary, because I do believe they're committed to change. Sheldon may or may not agree with that, and he needs to be a key voice in all of this, too.
I just don't see how this team, no one's fired, no one's accountable, no one's suspended, and they just move on. I would be stunned. If the you know, $7.6 million in 9 settlements since 1989, no one's known about this? Come on.
You know, all that's got to improve. And look, there's a major problem across the national sports organizations and with the government. Can't get through it all in a minute, but there's a lot of systemic change needs to happen. Sports orgs right. are way behind other organizations in addressing this.
All right. Tim Powers, David Moskrup, and Zane Velji. Gents, always a pleasure. Listen, step aside because Andre DeGrasse is coming through. Andre DeGrasse. That's okay. He's just a. When you guys go to the Olympics, call me, and then you'll be alone.
Then you'll be alone.
Then you'll be. You can't just visit.